Welcome to Quinn's Empowerment Hour on the BBS Radio Network, hosted by Quinn Leigh Erickson, psychotherapist, life coach, and inspirational speaker. Quinn's experience as a blind woman, a boat person from Vietnam, and a refugee has driven her to realize her dream to help you to become the best that you can be. So join Quinn every other Saturday, 9 p.m. Pacific Time, for an hour of insight and inspiration for your heart, your spirit, and your soul. Welcome to Quinn's Empowerment Hour with Quinn Leigh Erickson. Thank you for joining me tonight, our second episode together. Are you a man who struggles with anger and aggression? Or do you tend to be passive-aggressive, bitter, negative, sarcastic, or dismissive towards others? Join me tonight for a very powerful conversation with Dale Trimble, a therapist who has more than 30 years of experience working with anger and aggression in men and among couples. In this episode, we will discuss how anger is an indication of unmet needs. We will also talk about what specific strategies that you, as men, can use to make the best of your anger. Dale Trimble is a registered clinical counselor who has a master's degree in counseling psychology. Dale is a pioneer in the field of family violence. He set up the first program of court-ordered men who assaulted their wives in British Columbia. He is a founding member of the BC Association of Counselors of Abusive Men and received their Distinguished Service Award. He now travels across Canada and the U.S., providing training and consultation in the areas of conflict resolution and risk assessment and management in the workplace. To learn more about Dale Trimble and his work, visit www.daletrimble.com. That is www.daletrimble.com. So now here is Dale Trimble. So good evening, Dale. Thank you very much for coming onto my show. So I'm very excited and very honored that you have agreed to come on the show and share with us your expertise and perspective.
I'm happy to be here. To be on such a great show as yours.
So thank you very much.
I look forward to our conversation.
Me too. So now to start, maybe you can share with us a little bit about sort of what has led you into this field.
Sure. I got involved in working with men in regard to issues of anger and aggression right out of graduate school. Going back to 1977. And at that time, there weren't any programs of any kind for men who were aggressive or, using anger in a way that caused them to be arrested by the police. Mm-hmm. And so for about 3 or 4 years, I worked on a voluntary basis, co-leading group programs for men who were violent. Not all of them were court-ordered. Some of them were certainly attending voluntarily because either their partner, their girlfriend or spouse had left or was about to leave. And it became clear that we weren't going to be able to continue and meet the need unless we had a thorough, well-funded program. So in 1981, with Dr. Don Dutton of UBC, I co-founded the Vancouver Assault of Husbands program, which we ran for 23 years. And so during that period of time, provided group therapy for men who had been convicted of assault or other charges of aggression against their partner.
Mm-hmm. So you started way back in 1977.
That's right, yes.
And so you started out right away as a counselor at the time, or did you start out?
Yes. From developing that, I went on, I produced a video which was aired by Knowledge Network and with partially from funding, called Waking Up to Violence.
Waking up to
Waking
violence.
Up to Violence, it's now used by all of the counseling programs for men in the province of British Columbia, as well as many of the women's shelters, and used throughout Canada. In fact, over 65% of the women's shelters in this country use that video because it describes some of the common ways that men excuse their aggressive behavior.
So basically, your work has not only helped men, but also give women a different perspective on violence and anger and aggression in men.
Yes, I think so. That's the feedback I've been told anyway. And that's
And so how would someone access that video? It's called Waking.
Well, they can find it on my website, which is just daletrimble.com.
DaleTrimble.com.
Yeah,
Okay.
and
And what's the name of the video again?
it's called Waking Up to Violence.
Waking Up to Violence.
Yes.
Okay. So is it on YouTube? I guess it's a
No,
YouTube
it's
video.
not. We still do it the old-fashioned way, which is we mail out a DVD. I suppose it's time for me to set it up so it can be streamed to people.
And now I'm going to play the trailer of the video, Waking Up to Violence. Here is the trailer.
Is that what you're doing now? Is that what you two are doing,
You're
running around
just
out there?
jealous.
I'm not jealous. I work for this. I don't work for you to be going out every night.
What do you
Sit
want from
down. I'm
me?
not through with you.
Violence against women is endemic to our society. But these two police officers are likely to be confronted by a man who doesn't feel he's done anything wrong, who dismisses his violence with an excuse. Excuses that many of us buy into.
If she would just do her fair share, I wouldn't blow up.
She lied. I didn't do it.
I'm only violent when I'm drinking, and I've stopped drinking.
These are themes of defense, excuses men use to abuse. And with me in studio is Dale Trimble. He's been working with men who abuse for over 15 years, and he's identified a number of excuses or themes of defense that men use to justify their violent behavior. Until we learn to recognize these justifications as what they are, excuses, the abuse will continue.
What made you choose this area versus any other area?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. One is that, you know, when you're just out of graduate school and don't have a lot of money, I was hoping that it'd be a way of making money, but I didn't make any money doing it for several years. So there is that immediate financial interest, which didn't pay off for quite a number of years. But the second reason, I assumed at the time that men's aggression, their misuse of anger, was related to the ways in which we teach men to be men in our culture and society. And that had been a concern of mine for a number of years. And so I feel like working with that problem is an excellent way to begin to address the ways that we socialize men, that we socialize boys, that we shame them into not crying, not having a right to their own vulnerability, a right to their own emotions. And few emotions are acceptable outside of anger and being tough, being cold.
So that really leads to my next question. Is, you know, because I really hope this particular episode to really be a very good source of information for men, you know, because often any shows to do with emotional well-being, often they attract women, right? And so I really hope, you know, this conversation with you to be an episode where it's really useful for men.
I'm very happy to hear that, because that's part of the central meaning in my life is to reach out to men and provide a place of safety and connection.
So could you help me and the men and I guess the people in the men's lives understand, you know, how is anger or different in men. How do they tend to respond to conflicts? I think you kind of mentioned a little bit earlier in terms of, you know, not expressing more vulnerable emotions. So if you could sort of elaborate more on that, that'd be good.
Sure, I'd be happy to. I mean, to some degree, to answer that question is can result in a bit of a stereotype. And I think there's a full range in both men and women of an expression of anger. Nonetheless, there are some trends. And I would say that in my experience, there's a tendency for women to conceal anger behind tears and not to be so that the anger is turned inward, or it's displayed or shown through the crying, whereas actually that's a secondary emotion. The primary one is maybe tremendous anger. I think that women can be very cutting with words or social exclusion, and particularly that can be directed toward other girls or women. However, I think that one of the issues with men is that there may be a range of ways that men deal with anger. I certainly see some men that will withdraw. Mm-hmm. They'll shut down, they'll contain their anger. And if it comes out, it's in a passive-aggressive form, which might be contemptuous behaviors like eye-rolling or sarcastic tone of voice, hostile looks, and words, but never physically aggressive, or maybe even not even yelling.
Right.
So, and then we can see from that on the one, maybe one part of an axis from passive and withdrawing ways of dealing with the emotion of anger to the more explosive, or let me take the word explosive out, the more aggressive ways. And in my work, I look at several forms of anger and abuse, or I would say several forms of aggression. One is the obvious of physical aggression. There's also sexual aggression.
Yeah.
All the way up to, you know, from not taking no to an answer up to actual rape, psychological abuse, destruction of property or pets, economic abuse, controlling the money in the home, and even spiritual abuse, which is controlling the spiritual practice, the religion that their partner is allowed to participate in. So there's a full range of behaviors, and it really comes down to looking with the entering into a partnership with a man that I'm there to help, so that we can examine together the details of how he responds. And I think there's something extremely important, which is to separate the feeling of anger from a behavior, which may be aggressive behavior, right, and not to confuse those two.
Right.
Anger at its core is a healthy emotion that's there to inform us that in some way our feelings, our needs, or rights are being ignored or not taken into account. However, that anger might be based on a sense of entitlement. Perhaps the man expects his wife to make dinner because he's going to work, but neglects to acknowledge that she also works, does more housework, takes care of the kids. Mm-hmm. So we see that an emotion of anger out of which he chooses to become aggressive in many of those different forms is really based on this, on a sense of entitlement and a kind of, well, a sexism.
Mm-hmm. So I guess from what you just said, kind of two things came up for me. One is the, you know, you brought up a really good point that how often when we think of an angry man, we think of someone quite out there, very aggressive and aggressive in words, aggressive in sort of physically, in
right,
body language.
Right.
But what you described earlier is often it could be sort of more expressed in the form of sarcastic comments or bitterness or
yes,
a lot of negativity, So they might not see themselves as struggling with anger, but yet there might be a lot of anger inside.
Yes, that's right. True. And of course, as we all know now, that has tremendous kind of cost in terms of heart problems, stress levels, the constant use of, or the body's constantly secreting when a person's angry a lot, adrenaline and cortisol, there's a lot of muscle tension, there may be a variety of health problems and psychological problems as well related to depression, insomnia, high anxiety.
Right.
And so that a man may go to his doctor and get treatment for those things, but if the doctor's not tuned in to asking him about, well, what else is going on in your life?
Mm-hmm.
How is your life? How is your relationship? So that there's a context to those health symptoms.
So it really, if a man has prolonged anger, it really puts the body in a constant hyper arousal, stress kind of mode?
Yeah, it's, triggering the fight or flight response.
Mm.
So there's no rarely is there immediate risk to that man's life such that he needs to fight back or run for his life.
Mm-hmm.
But when we perceive a risk that's of a psychological nature, even if it's self-produced due to expectations that are really based on how traditional roles, nonetheless, the body is still responding as if there is that saber-toothed tiger and it's a high-risk situation. And by saying that, I do not mean to suggest in any way that the man does not have a choice over how he responds. And in fact, I struggle, I'll say that differently. I like to say in the workshops I lead that the term anger management makes me angry.
Right.
And the reason for that is that anger management is recommended or even court ordered for a variety of teens and adults, mostly men, occasionally women, for contexts that go all the way from bullying behaviors up to and including murder.
Is it kind of like just symptom management rather than looking at the roots of the anger, right? Kind of like putting a bandage on a person's wound rather than finding ways to really heal the wounds.
That's exactly right. And the thing is that it also implies that aggressive behavior is something that's automatic rather than behavior that's a choice. And I look at the choices that men make, even when they may tell me, I lost it, I flipped out, she pushes my buttons, those kinds of things. I could even give you a particular example that I've changed a few of the details, but would illustrate what I'm talking about.
Sure. Story is always more powerful.
I thought so. And so, first session with a man that came to see me because he was distressed with his response to his wife. He threw something at her. It hit her in the face. In fact, it hit her the corner of her eye, and she began to bleed from her eye.
Mm-hmm.
There was tremendous fear in both of their parts at that moment as to whether she might lose that eye.
Mm-hmm.
So what he told me is that I feel terrible about how I responded, and that's why I've come to you for help. I just lost it. I just want to make sure I never do that again. And so I said, well, what I'm curious about is the context in which you you chose to respond in that way. And he said, I don't think there was any choice involved. I just lost it. And I said, well, would it be all right if I asked you in more detail about what you did? And he said, sure. So I said, first of all, where were you in your home when you responded and threw something at your wife that caused this injury to her eye? And he said, well, we were in the kitchen. And I said, so can you describe what was going on. Well, we were having an argument. I can't even remember what it was about, but we were both mad and yelling at each other. And I said, so what exactly is it that you threw at her as you're standing in the kitchen? And where was she? Well, she was in the hallway out of the kitchen. What did you throw at her? And he said, well, I just suddenly grabbed this box of Kleenex and threw it at her. And it's a full box of Kleenex, which is cardboard, has a pointed corners. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those corners that hit the corner of her eye. And she didn't lose her vision. She did completely recover. But it was very frightening to both of them. So I said, well, can you, I want to ask you a little bit more if that's okay. Because I always want to ask permission and be compassionate and kind and realize that the man is sharing something with me that he feels often a great deal of shame about and confusion in regard to how it is that he came to do this. I said, would it be okay if I asked you a bit more? And he said, yeah, of course. I said, where was the box of Kleenex before you threw it? He said, well, it was on the counter. And he's looking at me a little bit like, why are you asking these kind of questions? I said, what else was on the counter? He said, oh, there was, there were a couple of bowls. There was a knife block with knives in it. And I said, well, why didn't you throw the bowls or even throw a knife at your wife? And he said, I didn't want to hurt her. Mm-hmm. And at that moment, it's like a light went on. And he realized that actually he made a choice. He made that choice quickly, but he made a choice to throw something that he believed would not hurt her. So it wasn't that he lost control. He was actually, although quite angry, making a controlled choice. And so I said, well, this is helping me to understand a lot. Can I ask you a little more? I said, you realize, if I understand you right, that you made a choice. And I said, and you're also saying you didn't want to hurt her. That was not your intent at all. He said, no, I certainly wasn't. I felt terrible when I saw the blood. I said, yeah, I can see that must have been really hard for you. And I said, well, could you tell me a bit more about how you were feeling inside before you grabbed that Kleenex box and threw it at her? And he said, I was feeling powerless. I said, what were you needing? Mm. He said, I needed her to listen. Mm-hmm. So what you're telling me is out of the feeling of powerlessness and needing her to listen, you chose to throw a Kleenex box. And I said, what were you intending? He said, I wanted her to stop. I wanted her to shut up. Mm-hmm. And he didn't say that shut up in an aggressive way. He was really deeply acknowledging, not just to me, but first of all, to himself. He was understanding and seeing that his intent was understandable. Not okay, but he was making sense that actually he was in control. He told himself a story, as we generally do with the way we use language. But then, in fact, from that, he was able to begin to make changes and stay safe. And also, when men confront what they've done in the detailed kind of way, the shame, which is most cases is there, it can be put to good work, because at their core, the great majority of men I work with mm-hmm. have the same values that they want to live their life from, like any other man or woman. Values of respect and kindness and listening and about communication. So I hope that story illustrates some of what I believe is important.
Yeah, and I think one point that really stands out for me, is sort of being able to encourage or help the men get in touch with their more vulnerable feelings or emotions, right? Yes. Because like you said earlier, a lot of the time it's so much easier to express feelings of words or behaviors of anger, and yet deep down, you know, often it's a sense of powerlessness or a hurt, or sometimes even being abandoned or helplessness, all those things. Yes. But yet, I guess at that moment, he wasn't able to tell her that I need you to really listen to me.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
So then how can men get in touch with that side of them in a way that's sort of more accessible for them, or safer or easier for them?
Well, I think that's the value of coming to a counselor or a therapist, whether that's individually or in a group program, and that often the tensest times of the groups that we used to lead, which were 16-week groups, generally anywhere from 8 to maybe 14 men, pretty tense in the first evening. And by the end of the evening, the men were saying, I realize I can learn a lot here. I feel better about having come. I feel even sometimes, even on that first night, saying I feel proud of myself that I'm facing this. And I can see that I'm going to get some help.
And so what, I know sometimes men are reluctant reaching out for support and going to groups. So what kind of group is that? How do I explain? What's the name of the group? That is it sort of an anger focused group? Is it?
It might be, you know, anger management for men. As much as I said, I have trouble with with the phrase anger management.
But that's what people know by.
Yeah, that's the handle that's often used. Now, I do want to qualify and say what anger management refers to are a lot of very helpful skills that are part of what's also referred to as emotional intelligence. And so that a lot of what we do is in those programs, I don't run them anymore, but there are still some happening. And there are men, there are fewer programs now than there was 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, unfortunately. But there are a number of therapists around the province that do specialize in working with men. And so there's opportunities to begin to understand. And I think one of the key things that challenges that men face in dealing with anger is that men are isolated emotionally.
Yes.
And isolated socially. And that, you know, what we know from at least one of the studies indicates that women are 6 times the risk of physical violence when they leave their relationship. And I'm clear that the reason for that is that it seems ironic, but the man's response to their partner leaving frequently due to many of the behaviors we talked about is, well, one way I have of saying it is that he's put all of his eggs in one basket,
right?
And she is that basket, and so she's leaving.
And so he's even more desperate to keep her.
To control her, to keep her, to insist, to threaten, and to escalate. The deeper reason is the fear of abandonment, the tremendous fear of isolation. And so men tend not to reach out to friends, even to go to a doctor as often as they should, to seek the kind of help that can really truly make a difference. And so those are some of the kinds of things that a man who's, say, might be listening to this program now could benefit from is reaching out in their community to connect with a counselor and get some help before it's too late. In fact, one of the scenes in the video, Waking Up to Violence, is one man in a group program Man, it was set up for the cameras, but this man was an actual participant in one of our groups.
Mm.
And so another group member in this scene is saying, I shouldn't have to be here. She lies. She made up lies. It's not fair. The system's out to get man. And this man looks at him, a former group member, and says, I don't know what you did that got you here, but I wish that I'd gotten into a program like this. I think you've got some problems with anger. I think you need to face yourself, and I hope you do. It's too late for my marriage.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be too late for yours.
Yeah.
So I think you should stay and get some help.
Well, you know, I think it's a lot more difficult for men, because for us women, we can complain, we can cry, we can talk to co-workers, friends. And I mean, I used to work as a grief counselor, and actually now I work with women who are fleeing from abusive relationships.
Uh-huh.
And you know, a lot of time men are, like you said, a lot more isolated. They're actually, their partner or wife, usually their only source of emotional support.
That's so true.
And, you know, rather than telling her, you know, I need you this, or I really, you know, express emotions, rather than those things, they resort to aggressive words or behaviors. And yet, you know, women are dying to hear those vulnerable words coming from a man. It's like music to the ears.
Yeah. Yes.
What else can help men in terms of anger, beside, you know, kind of being in touch with more vulnerable emotions?
Well, a psychologist by the name of Marshall Rosenberg, who wrote a book and runs programs entitled Nonviolent Communication, A Language of Compassion, I think is the full title of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he said, and I've done a couple of trainings with him myself, something he said that's always stayed with me, and I often use it in therapy sessions and explore it, is, he said, anger is always about unmet needs.
Mm-hmm.
So I often will say that in the early part of a first session with a man who's come to me and say, so if that was true for you, in this moment that you've told me about, when you were aggressive in the way you described, what were you needing?
Right.
As a story I told about the man who threw the Kleenex box,
mm-hmm.
he acknowledged that he was needing his partner to listen, and that his feeling at that moment was also one of powerlessness, which is the opposite of what a real man should be.
Right.
And so I find that that is a powerful question. The other thing that's done in the both individual or group counseling sessions is the use of one form of anger management or emotional intelligence training, and that's called an anger journal or an anger diary, in which a man will write down and separate and distinguish between what is a cue, in other words, what is it that his partner said or did that he responded to, what were his sensations in his body. So it's increasing mindfulness of what's happening inside.
Mm-hmm.
What did he say to himself about what she said or did, which is what we call the talk up. And that might be, first of all, it's what he says internally, something like, she doesn't have a right to talk to me like that after everything I do for her. So this is the ways of escalating the anger, which are about blame,
mm-hmm.
and not about responsibility. And the last column in an anger journal would be talk down. So what can you say to yourself that's true, that's real, that would increase your ability to make choices that you feel good about. So it might be as simple as, I realize I'm angry. I don't want to scare her or push her away from me. I know I'm angry. I need to take a time out, go mm-hmm. for a walk. I realize I'm angry. What am I really needing right now? So those are some of the kinds of things that can be done. The other thing that a technique that's often taught in many of the courses or individual sessions is what's called a timeout, but there are specific rules about a timeout. I even have a wallet, a size business card that's called the timeout procedure, and where a man would follow the script, which is, I'm angry, I'm going to take a timeout, and he says this out loud. Then he goes away, ideally for up to an hour, and during that time doesn't focus on the argument because he doesn't want, it's not okay to be escalating your thinking by going over it and getting angrier when you're away from the person. Mm-hmm. Maybe do things like, you know, going for a walk, doing something to use up the physical energy of the anger. And the key thing is that anger, taking time out, doesn't solve the problem, but it's a way of taking responsibility for what you're doing at the time and reducing the risk of choosing aggression over choosing a nonviolent way to express feelings and needs and to listen to his partner.
Mm-hmm. So that, again, going back to the making a choice.
Yes.
In the moment.
That's true.
I read about sort of how when we're angry, sort of the fight-flight response and our brain is being activated, like kind of like the limbic system.
Yes.
So at that time, our thinking brain is not working. So when someone's really upset and in the heat of the moment and he's not going to remember what you said here, what is something very quick that or easy that he could remember to do?
When I'm working with a couple, and I only work with a couple where the man has used violence, after seeing his partner individually and making sure it's safe enough, she feels safe enough, they have a safety plan, and he's acknowledged responsibility for his behavior and has done some work on changing that. So after those criteria are satisfied, then I would work with a couple if they both want that and they want to stay together or put their relationship back together in a loving way. What I will recommend is a timeout, and that either person can say they want a timeout. And I'll actually even have encourage him to practice that, which I describe as just like if you're an actor in a play or a movie, you would practice your lines.
Yeah.
You would practice saying them out loud, and you would practice how you walk on stage and what your actions are. So I say, I'm going to encourage you to do something which sounds silly and embarrassing. And I'm going to encourage you to go home and practice taking a time out. So in other words, he would say, this is a practice timeout, and say out loud, I'm angry, I'm going to take a timeout. Then he goes, gets his coat, his keys, and his wallet, and goes out the door and closes the door behind him without slamming it and without throwing any negative comments over his shoulder. So what he's developing is the technically what we've called a kinesthetic memory or a felt sense.
Yeah.
So that his body can remember. Mm. His mouth and words and jaw can remember. What is it like to say this, to do this in response? That's laying down a sequence of behaviors. As the Canadian neuroscientist said, neurons that fire together, wire together.
Right.
And so he's developing a habit in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And furthermore, I'm going to encourage her, because I'm curious as well, is how does he respond in that? How does she respond in those moments? If he's maybe even tried to take a time out before, some women might have said out of their own fear of abandonment, just going to be a quitter. You can never face your problems. What's wrong with you?
Right.
Why don't you face it like a man? I'm just giving some examples.
Yes.
That's always the case. Or pleading with him to stay, or being afraid of him leaving, which could be based upon that he's gone out before, gotten drunk and driven drunk when he's left, gone and had an affair, a one-night stand, So she may have some anxieties that are based on a real history of what I would call also abusive behavior in the relationship. So those are some of the kinds of things that I would suggest in a practical way. And there's one other thing I wanted to talk about, is if it's all right to go on and describe another concern, which is that, you know, some men will come in and say, well, she's violent with me too.
Yeah, and that happens.
Yes. and the historical response, I'm embarrassed to say by myself and many others, and still happening, is, well, we're not here to talk about her. We're here to talk about you. You're the one, if it's a court-ordered situation, you're the one who's been convicted of assault, or I can only help you because I'm seeing you in the office, or maybe she's got some mental health problems. Have you asked her to see a doctor? All of those, unfortunately, and I'm embarrassed to say, are responses that some so-called professionals have engaged in.
Right.
So the important thing about is I want to find out what are the details. I want to understand his experience of how she responds to him. What are the words she says that he responds that hurt him the most?
Mm-hmm.
Or what are the words she says that he has an angry response to? And has she ever been aggressive to him?
Yeah.
Now, the context is profoundly important. Some studies that have been done, even very large studies, have indicated that women's violence is equal to men's violence. The problem is that a number of these studies don't take into account the context. In other words, is her aggression toward him a response to his aggression or his threats of aggression?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we don't know if it was defensive violence
or
not. That's not too often not asked. But the other very important aspect here in regard to women's use of violence in the relationship is that men can be hurt emotionally and even physically by aggression from their female partner.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, I want to stress the emotional aspect of it. It can be very startling, frightening, have a high impact in his emotional body, on his sense of self, if she strikes him. And some women will respond aggressively during an argument, even if he's not been aggressive or threatened aggression, due to who they are, to their own history and previous relationships, or their own growing up context. So I think it's really important to explore that and to honor his experience of being shaken, feeling ashamed that she has hit him, possibly. And that to feel upset about that is again falls into the area of, oh, come on, a woman hit you and you're going to be a cry about it?
Yeah.
Give me a break. Be a man. Don't be a wimp.
Yeah.
So I think that's an aspect that is too often not taken into account by therapists and is dismissed by the men themselves in their own experience.
Yeah, and it's a lot harder for men to admit to friends or even professionals, even for the police, right, that they have been physically abused.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I still operate, and my experience has been that primarily it's men who are the perpetrators of violence. It's women who are at risk. It's women who are much more often killed, severely injured for the rest of their life, or murdered, or killed, as I've said. Nonetheless, we need to deal with each individual context, and each man and woman needs to examine what's happening in their own life rather than go from a general stereotype or sociological study.
So then in domestic violence, is it more about anger? Is it more about power and control, or is it sort of all interconnected?
Well, I think it's all, as you said, it's interconnected. I think that in the moment, responding with aggression or threats of aggression, or other kinds of threats, we haven't even gone into a great deal into psychological abuse. In the moment, that can restore a sense of power. But that's power that's not real. That's power that's based on fear. And it doesn't give men a better life. We know that men live shorter lives. They commit suicide at a much higher rate. And all a number of other issues.
Yeah, and addictions and all those other things, right? Yeah.
So,
so what would you like to say to the men on this show tonight?
I would like to say, take a quiet moment with yourself to reflect on the truth of what you do. If you feel ashamed of your responses, even though a part of you has felt justified, it may even still be angry. That shame to me is a sign that there's a big part of you that says it's not okay to say what I've said, to do what I've done, because I can see the pain it's caused in the person who I used to love and may still, in fact, love very much. So take a moment to really deeply reflect upon the kind of life you want and whether or not you can be, take the courage really to face and live up to the kind of husband you'd like to be, the kind of partner that you'd like to be. Reach out to a counselor in your community. You could contact myself, and if I'm not able to see you or we're in different communities, then I'm happy to help connect you with someone in your community that could help you turn your life around and result in more dignity for you and more happiness for the people that you care about and still hope will care about and love you.
And that's very powerful. And I think that's the kind of, even going to that place might seem vulnerable, and but yet that's the kind of power that lasts a long time, right?
That's and, true.
And, you know, even if this marriage doesn't work out for you, you can use that, you know, as a father, as a son, as a future partner or a future husband. So it's a lifelong kind of transformation, you know, that, that sort of you could see that in different areas of your life, and it can be quite liberating, I would imagine.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Before we end, do you have any sort of one last sort of story to tell, one last thought to say, anything?
I was thinking, if I can find it here, I think I can, we'll see. There's a little quotation I'd like to read from a book. It's by a Buddhist, quite well-known, Thich Nhat Hanh.
Right.
And the book is entitled Anger, Wisdom for Cooling the Flames. So I could read that if you would like.
Oh, that would be lovely.
Just very brief. So it goes like this. If a mother is working in the kitchen and hears her baby crying, she puts down anything that she is holding and goes into the baby's room. Nothing is more urgent than the baby's cries. The first thing she does is pick up the baby and embrace the baby. Remember when you were a little child and you had a fever, and although they gave you aspirin and things like that, you didn't feel better until your mother came and she put her hand on your burning forehead. That felt so good. A Her hand was like the hand of a goddess. A lot of freshness, a lot of love and compassion penetrated into your body just because you were touched by the hand of your mother. That hand of your mother is your hand. That energy is still alive in your hand. If you know how to breathe in and out to be mindful, then touching your forehead with your very hand, you can see that your mother's hand is still alive. You will have the same kind of energy of love and tenderness for yourself. When you hear your baby of anger crying, you have to drop everything that you were doing, because the most important thing you have to do is take care of your baby, anger.
Thank you very much, Dale. And again, you know, don't suffer with your anger. Reach out. So go to Dale Trimble's website, www.Dale Trimble.com. Either you can see him, or you can see his videos, and understand you do corporate training as well, right?
Yes, I've done a variety of workshops in the area of conflict resolution. If I'm not able to provide it, then I know people that I trust to.
Yes, you're in the field for, right, like you said, since 1977.
That's right.
So we're really, really happy to have you on the show. I think this information will be extremely helpful and useful for men and the people in their lives. You know, it's right. A kind of, what do they call that kind of impact? You know, sort of like a spiral kind of impact. You just right. don't know how the seeds will grow, right?
Creative changes for the better.
Yes. So thank you, Dale. And thank you very much for your time and coming on to the show.
I appreciate the opportunity to share this with your listeners.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right. Bye.
And that's the end of our show tonight. Join me 2 Saturdays from now, October 17, for another great show where I will invite a clinical sexologist, Dr. Renee Lengto from Vancouver, who will come to the show live for you to ask questions, and she will share with you her expertise in sex and sexuality. So if you have any questions that you'd like me to ask Dr. Renee on the show, feel free to email me the questions. So go to my website, www.quynle.com. That is www.quynle.com, and email me the questions that you'd like to be answered on the show. Or even better yet, you can call in on October 17, 9 p.m. to ask your questions, to share your experience about sex, sexual intimacy, and sexuality. So you have a great night, and see you 2 Saturdays from now. Good night. This is Quinn's Empowerment Hour, hosted by Quinle Erickson, every other Saturday, 9 p.m. Pacific Time. For more information about Quinn, visit www.quynle.com. Thank you so much for tuning in, and you have a beautiful, restful sleep. Good night.